And did you hear on my mind every hour of the day without your sweet inspiration?
It's another Tuesday night, everybody. It's 7 p.m. on the West Coast, which you know means it's time for the Tammy Jackson Show on the 405. This is Tammy Jackson welcoming you to an hour of sweet conservative inspiration. If you'd like to do so, go ahead and interact with comments and or questions. I don't get too many questions. I get a lot of comments here and there. But on Twitter, do it on Twitter during the show. You can follow me at Tammy J, T-A-M-I-J. Let's get going. My first guest tonight is no stranger to the show, although he's been absent for a few years. Haven't had him here since, I think, 2013 or so. I can't believe the time's gone by. This is Yoni Titi. Yoni is a friend. He's an Orthodox Jew. He served Israel as a master sniper and a member of one of her anti-terrorist units. When he left that unit, he was second in command of the all-volunteer special op unit. He's an American citizen as well as an Israeli citizen. There's probably some other stuff in there, but never mind. But he never shies away from straight talk, which is what makes him really, really fun. Yoni, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. I can't believe it's been so long.
I know. Where did the time go? So a lot has happened since I've had you on the show. And I thought, well, like you've done with some other shows, let's start with some general politics. It's always fun because I don't have to tell you to man up and not be so wishy-washy. You tell us what you think right away, and it's refreshing. But I want to talk a little bit about last year's election in November. And the mainstream media was shocked, that, and Hillary's disciples were shocked, and all the deplorables across America were a little bit surprised but excited that we didn't have Hillary Clinton. What were your thoughts at the time about Donald Trump and the election?
You know, I did not support the president in the primary. I was pulling for somebody else, and I was wrong. We have a man in the Oval Office who's the most unique president in my lifetime. I think that if the Republican Party would get its act together and support him 100%, I think he'd go down in history as one of the greatest presidents. Unfortunately, I think that the Democrats, the news media, and the Republican Party don't care for him because he's shaking up the status quo. And I'm not a supporter of the status quo. So God bless him and keep him strong, keep him alive, and let's get him for a second term.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Yoni, he wasn't my first choice. You know where I stand. I'm a woman of faith. I'm very, very conservative. I'm big on the Second Amendment and life and all these other things. So there were other people that I supported, and I thought, I didn't think ill of Donald Trump. I'd read his book, The Art of the Deal, which I loved, by the way. I thought it was fascinating. I read it years ago when it came out. But I couldn't imagine him being president. But when it got down to the whole binary choice, I would tell people, and I said it a lot of times on the air, that people wondered if they could trust Donald Trump to do what he said he would do. And I said, well, I don't know if you can or not, but we know that we can trust that Hillary Clinton 100% will do what she says she's going to do, which is for abortion at any time up until the birth of a baby, for open borders and chain migration and the immigration lottery, letting anybody into our country. Everything that she wanted. I mean, look at the fact that she sold 20% of our strategic uranium to Russia. There's so many things that she did, Benghazi and on and on and on. And to let her in the White House, I thought would be a crime. So at that point, I thought, you know what? You got to take a chance with Donald Trump. And like you, I have been so pleasantly surprised. He's been extremely pro-life, pro-America, pro-Israel, pro-military, all the things that I love. he is doing and doing in spades. And compared to the wimpy guy we had in there before, who was a socialist and a wimp,
he was not a wimp. I'm going to disagree with you.
What's that?
He was not a President Obama was not a wimp. President Obama, we will figure out sooner rather than later, I hope, just how brilliant, how bold, how decisive he was, because President Obama was probably one of the greatest presidents in the history of the United States for destroying the United States.
Yes.
And the sooner we figure that, the sooner we figure that out, we know that he cut a deal with Hezbollah not to prosecute them for drug running and money laundering and all sorts of other things. We know that he made a deal with the Iranians that will guarantee that they will get nuclear weapons. A very good friend of mine, his father in Israel, is in a position to know, and I can't go in any farther than that. But that treaty had two parts, one that was public knowledge and one that went before the International Atomic Energy Association. Nuclear power and weapons and, the watchdog.
Right.
He, because of his position, he got to see the second half. And this is not a man that sees eye to eye with me on hardly anything. But he said flat out, the deal that Obama made will guarantee that Iran has nuclear weapons. And if Hillary would have been elected president, God forbid, it would have been all over, both for the United States and for Israel, excluding divine intervention and a lot of luck on the part of Israel to take out the Iranian nuclear weapons program. Been over. Thank God. I think she's delegated to history, and hopefully, more and more of the American people will keep waking up that a strong America is the best thing for the world. Because when America goes, the rest of the world will go, and we are going to go into a long period of darkness until we can rediscover that the rights of the individuals matter, the state is not the most important thing, that the individual is the most important thing, and it'll take a long time for people to get their individual liberty and freedoms as guaranteed by the Constitution that has been eroded by both political parties. I am not a supporter of the status quo. I am not a Republican. I vote Republican because that's all I've got. But
right.
You know what? A pox on their house also. We
yes.
need the American people to wake up. And look, the people in Israel have pretty much woken up. You know, if you look at a political poll in Israel, the vast majority of people are against the Palestinian state. You know, depending on the poll, it might even be over 70%.
Wow.
We're finally learning from our mistakes. Unfortunately, the American so-called Jews are still dumber than dirt, and the vast majority of them don't support the move of the embassy of the United States from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, not now and not ever, and a pox on their house because they're no longer Jews. If Jerusalem isn't a central part of a Jew's life, then they are no longer Jews. I'm sorry. This crosses a pale. In Israel, you know, when we build a new house, we leave a section of the wall by the front door unfinished. And most people frame it like a picture. Why do we do that? To remind ourselves that the temple is still destroyed.
Wow.
On the last happy day of a man's life when he gets married, what does he do? He breaks the glass. No, I'm just kidding. He knows that he reminds himself that Yerushalayim, Jerusalem, the temple still hasn't been rebuilt. So even on the happiest day of a person's life, they break something to remind themselves that the temple is still broken. And anybody that opposes a move of the American embassy to Jerusalem, you know what? They're just not keeping up with the times. A leading Saudi figure this week said, "We as Arabs have to recognize that Jerusalem is a Jewish religious symbol as sacred to Jews as Mecca and Medina is sacred to Muslims." Who would have thought 3-4 years ago we'd have a high-ranking Saudi saying such a thing?
Yes.
The Iranians are redrawing the Middle East. We're making friends where we used to be enemies. And I pray to God that Israel is smart enough to understand that in very short order, the Palestinians can fall by the wayside. Because with the defeat of ISIS, the most radical people in the Middle East today is the Palestinians.
Yes.
We just had a Palestinian, I'm not going to call him an Israeli Arab. We just had a Palestinian member of our parliament, because he's certainly not an Israeli Arab, because he said that the national anthem is disgusting to him, and that the flag of Israel is just a rag and should be treated as such. The fact that this man is in my parliament disgusts me to no end. And we see that post President Trump recognizing that Jerusalem belongs to us, the Jews, we see the Palestinian Authority has cut off ties with the United States. The Palestinian Authority, today, they just came out with a new statement today. Trump, give Israel the White House, but don't touch Jerusalem. And then they go on and they lie. Israeli archaeologists have found no proof that there was a temple on the mount.
Oh, my word.
They want to whitewash history, take it away, and, they're boycotting the Vice President Pence. The mayor of Bethlehem had a sign set put up. Bethlehem welcomes the messengers of peace, not the messengers of war. Pence, go home.
Oh, wow. That's pretty amazing. I got to tell you, about me. You know what I feel about Israel, about the Jews, about America. I agree with the words of Genesis 12:2. I will bless those who bless you. I will curse him who curses you. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So I believe that wholeheartedly. And I tell you what, the people that talk about Palestinians, I could go on and on about that, because really the Palestinian, that's a misnomer. It really is. But the idea that Jerusalem is in fact the capital of Israel, that's a fact. All the offices are there. It has been the capital of Israel since 48, but prior to that, for 3,000 years, that's where Abraham took Isaac to sacrifice him, and then that was stopped as God intervened. The Temple Mount was that spot, but that's where Jerusalem was, on that hill there. And
let's look at two basic facts. We had 8 years of a president that hated Israel and did everything that he could to bring about the destruction of the state of Israel. The Arab Spring was nothing more than Barack Obama's CIA fomenting trouble in the Middle East to overthrow socialist and have all of the Arab Middle East march on Israel. That's what the Arab Spring was. That's what its design was. That's what its intent was. No ands, ifs, or buts. We know that Obama did the deal with the Iranians that will guarantee nuclear weapons. We know that Obama snubbed the Prime Minister of Israel. I don't care if you like Bibi Netanyahu or you don't like him. He's the Prime Minister of a country. He didn't deserve to be treated the way that Obama treated him.
Correct.
And look at how the economy of the United States languished under the last years of Obama.
Yes.
Trump comes in with the promise on his lips that I'm going to move the embassy. He still hasn't done it. And because Trump is already blessing Israel, look at how the stock market's taken off.
Yes.
And people can go, oh, Yoni, you're crazy, you're nuts. I'm sorry, you know, you can call me anything you want. But you know what? In Bereshit, in Genesis, as you would say, when God made a promise, he made a very interesting promise. He said, I will bless them that bless thee, and those that will curse you, I will curse. Now understand the order of the words. God Almighty, the creator of the world, will proactively bless you even before you've blessed Israel, if that's your intent. Because God said first, I will bless them that bless you. And those that curse you, I will curse. So on the blessing side, God said that he will do it proactively. On the cursing side, because God Almighty is merciful, he gives people a chance to maybe reconsider what they're doing before he actually curses them. And we see with the changing of the guard, we see the curse is gone, we see it replaced with a blessing, and we see the economy of the United States, even before a tax bill is passed, has taken off in the last year like wildfire, and there's a spirit of optimism among most Americans that live outside of the urban centers.
Most yeah. People,
most normal people in the country.
Right.
And it's fantastic.
It is. It is. Hey, I wanted to share a little something with you that's really funny. My friend Kurt Schlichter, I don't know if you ever hear Kurt. He's a lawyer. He was an Army colonel. He's very funny, writes for Breitbart and elsewhere, and he's a good friend. He wrote an article that I had up at Barbwire titled, 11 Things Every Real Conservative Should Ask on a First Date. And the reason I want to share this is because of point number five, which is, the whole thing's very, very funny. But number five is to ask your date, do you support Israel in its fight against 7th century savagery? The only acceptable response is, oh, hell yeah. Extra points if your date adds, every time the IDF launches an airstrike on Hamas, an angel gets his wings. And all that land the Palestinian thugs are squatting on, that's part of Israel too.
Absolutely. There is an occupation, and they are occupying the land that God Almighty gave me.
Yes. Yes. You know, and I was going to ask you about Trump's announcement. You've already told us that. As I told you when we talked the other day, my pastor was talking about how crazy it is that any country has their embassy in Tel Aviv, because they go from Tel Aviv, they drive them down to Jerusalem for meetings with their counterparts there, and then they drive back to Tel Aviv. It's nonsense. And then, you know, just the whole bad move on the part of Moshe Dayan to relinquish the Temple Mount. Yoni, there's peace and freedom in Israel, but not on the Temple Mount, where the armed, I don't even know how you pronounce it, it's like Waqf or something, it's the Jordan-based Muslim organization that guards the Temple Mount. Boy, they're heavy-handed there. You don't misstep at all, or they're all over.
But you got to understand the history, because the Waqf, historically, you go back 70 years ago, and the man's name was Husseini. And where did he spend World War II? In Berlin. He was Hitler's buddy. He raised out of the Balkans Muslim soldiers to be part of extermination squads in the Eisenstaffgruppe, the murderers of Jews.
Right.
That's the kind of people that we have, you know, that have been over the Temple Mount. Look, Moshe Dayan was, as well as most of the leadership at that time in Israel, they were either socialist or they were communist. And they had a certain vision of how the world should be. And obviously the world isn't that way. And thank God they pretty much have died off in Israel and everywhere else. And you know, we've got people that understand. I mean, the one thing that most people don't know is that Rabbi Gorin, the chief rabbi of the IDF at the time of the Six-Day War, as soon as the Temple Mount was liberated, he set up a school inside the mosque. And then he was ordered by Moshe Dayan to get rid of it after a period of time, and I don't remember off the top of my head. It was a number of weeks, if memory serves me correct. And he said in his later years, he regrets following that order to the day he's going to die. Wow. He should have stayed in there, and he might have been able to change things. Look, we know as Orthodox Jews, we know that before we go to an all-out war, we have to make an offer of peace. And I would say that since 1967, more times than I can count, Israel has tried to make an offer of peace to the Palestinians.
Oh, yes.
And I'm saying that the days of those offers has closed, and something is going to be coming, hopefully, God willing, in the very near future. And I would like to see Israel take care of our Arab problem at the same time that Western Europe wakes up and takes care of theirs. The whole world will be focused on Western Europe, and we do what we have to do, using whatever force is reasonable and necessary in order to ensure that Judea and Samaria, erroneously called the West Bank, and Jerusalem remains in our hands forever, and that we rid ourselves of the people that are a made-up people, that if you actually do a moral equivalency test between them and the Nazis, the Palestinians lose, because no mother of a Nazi soldier ever wanted their child to become a suicide victim in order to murder Jews. No mother in Nazi Germany ever told her child, the highest thing that you can do is to commit suicide while you're murdering Jews. Every mother in Nazi Germany wanted their child to come home from that war. It didn't matter if they were rabid Nazis and their children were part of the killing squads, or if their kids were working in supply and they hated Hitler. They all wanted their kids to come home.
Yes.
And the Palestinians want their kids to grow up to be suicide bombers and suicide terrorists so that they can murder Jews. Now, in my book, that puts them much worse than any Nazi ever was, because it's just a matter of statistics. Well, guess what, people? If the Palestinians had the chance, they would outdo the Nazis, because there's over 7 million Jews in Israel today, and they'd kill every single one of them.
Oh, of course they would. You know, I was also going to say, I found this, Yoni, and I shouldn't have been shocked, but I was a little bit. Wikipedia, which is notoriously liberal and slanted, but once in a while you can get good information there. But what I was looking to see what they had to say about the Temple Mount, and they said that it has been a venerated holy site for thousands of years for Jews, Christians, and Muslims. That's absolutely not true. Muslims tacked on Jerusalem as a holy site. That was a Johnny-come-lately. It's never even mentioned in the Quran, and I want people to know that. So when they hear that, it's a big fat lie.
Yeah, it's only become a holy spot to them since the last 80 years, 70 years, 60 years, something like that.
Right.
As it became important, as we've gained in strength, it became more holy for them.
Yes. Yes. Well, okay, there's some good stuff going on over there. I want them to hurry up and get our embassy moved, which, as you know, could be really easy. We've got the American installment there in Jerusalem. We could just change the signs. Boom, done deal. I don't know what the holdup is, but at least Trump made the announcement. He wants to have it moved. So we hear it's going to be moved. He's been keeping his other promises. So I'm excited to see that done. In the time we've got left, we've got about 5 minutes here. I'd like you to talk about your new venture. This is pretty amazing. If you're just joining the show, I'm speaking with my guest, Yoni Titi. He served Israel as a master sniper. He was a member of one of Israel's anti-terrorist units. When he left the unit, he was second in command of the all-volunteer special ops unit. He's an American citizen, Israeli citizen, and others. But this latest venture, would you tell the listeners what is CyberGhost Global and why it is so special?
Well, to the best of my knowledge, we are the first in the United States companies that are based Israeli people. They all came out of the IDF cyber unit, which is called Shmoni Matayim in Hebrew, A200, which means they're very, very good. Unlike them, all our cyber people are Mossad. And when I say Mossad, I mean they still are there. They work part-time in government service and part-time in our company. So we're the first people working through the United States at the bus.
And the fact that you're mentioning Mossad is really something interesting, Yoni, because in years past, we didn't even talk about Mossad. It was actually a ghost agency as such. I guess that's what I would call it anyway. So this is pretty amazing.
Look, they had to face certain realities. Their people, if they left, were being given, you know, the equivalent of winning the lottery just for signing a contract with a high-tech firm. And so they had to come up with a way to keep people working, but also so they could enrich themselves. And if you think about it, the United States of America in cybersecurity to Israel, it's very simple. The FBI, the NSA, the CIA, the White House, the Pentagon, the Office of Personnel Management of the United States government, they've all been hacked more times than we can count. The equivalent agencies in Israel have never been hacked. It's right. Real simple. You right. Want real cybersecurity, CyberGhost Global is the place to come to get it. Everything is tailor-made. Nothing is off the shelf. The first thing we do with the client is we have them fill out a questionnaire so that we can do a threat assessment of where they're at, what are they facing. You know, are they facing state actors potentially? Are they facing hackers, regular hackers? What are they facing so we can get a handle on what they're facing? I mean, we've just got so much cool stuff. We've got two server locations that are in unnamed places for servers and data storage that are both underground, complete climate controlled, complete separation from the power grid and everything, so in case of a natural disaster, the place will never go down. Armed ex-Israeli special ops security 24/7. Nobody's ever getting into it. I can guarantee that if a company comes with us and we put up their whole cyber, including using our servers and everything, I will guarantee that they'll never be hacked by anybody.
And that's a pretty darn good guarantee. We've run out of time, and this stuff is great. I've got it linked on the show page, Yoni. It's cyberghostglobal.com. I want people to check it out because I know that there are people listening that have companies. They know people that have companies. There are corporations, etc., that really, really need your service. And I know they won't regret it because you are absolutely guaranteeing this stuff, and you've got the best of the best.
Two quick points. Yes. Two quick points. Somebody brings me somebody, we pay a very generous finder's fee. That's number one. And when I say I guarantee it, I will give you all your money back if you're hacked.
That's a pretty darn good guarantee. You're not getting better than that. Hey, Yoni, thanks so much for taking the time to be on tonight. I always love talking to you. And you know I wish you great success in this venture, and I'm going to see if I can help you out in any way. I will have you back again, my friend.
All righty. Take care.
Okay. You're listening to the Tammy Jackson Show on the 405. I'll be back on the other side of the break with U.S. Army Captain, retired Tyler Merritt. The Tammy Jackson Show is brought to you by Rent-A-Computer. An agent from Rent-A-Computer can save your company time and money on your next short-term need for a computer, audio, visual, or office equipment rental. Rent-A-Computer.com delivers the rental hardware your event needs to your office, trade show booth, or event venue location anywhere in the United States or Canada. Offerings include Apple iPads, iPhones, Microsoft Surface tablets, and more. So if you're planning your next corporate event, remember rentacomputer.com. Call them at 800-736-8772. That's rentacomputer.com, sponsor of the Tammy Jackson Show.
You're on the 405.
Shop Amazon, support the 405 Media. Click on the banner on top of our homepage. Then you know what to do. The 405 Media is an Amazon associate. That means you get great deals on Amazon.com and support the Talk Alternative at no extra charge. We are the 405media.com. Thank you.
The President and I have witnessed firsthand the compassion and commitment of Americans as friends, neighbors, and strangers continue to volunteer time and money to help one another following the recent hurricanes. Your help is still needed. Donate to an organization of your choice and volunteer to help your fellow Americans. Visit nvoad.org and ready.gov to learn more.
Whoa, a new digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Oh, I'm glad you like it, because I can't wait to toss the big stereo. And now that we got your dad that big HD TV he wanted, we can throw out our old TV, too.
Hold up. You can't just throw out electronics.
Really?
They need to be recycled or donated.
And how would we do that?
It's so easy, Mom. Today, recycling electronics is just as easy as buying them. GreenerGadgets.org has all the info. We just enter our zip code to find a certified recycling center nearby. There are thousands of them, and new ones are being added all the time. Some of our local stores are even certified recycling locations.
I like that.
Did you know that some of the stuff in our old electronics could be used to make new products and conserve natural resources?
Well, okay then. Let's gather them up. What was that website again?
GreenerGadgets.org. We just enter our zip code and go.
I love Tammy.
I love you back, Kurt, because I'm a caring kind of gal.
The Tammy Jackson Show.
I'm just one conservative gal encouraging you to keep fighting the good fight.
Tammy is what conservative insurgency is about.
Tammy Jackson, the granddaughter of legal immigrants.
In Honduras, they had 60,000 murders per 100,000, something like that. And I thought, whoa, that is a lot.
Like every other person on the block is dead.
Tammy Jackson, the emerging threat from the West Coast.
Tammy has made herself into a rising radio star.
When we have these mass amounts just suddenly pour into the United States, we have a worse problem than we already have had with assimilation.
The Tammy Jackson Show, Tuesday nights, 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific, only on the 405media.com.
Anything for you, Tammy.
The 405.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Tammy Jackson. I'm a little over halfway through the show here on the 405 Media, and now I'm joined by my guest, Tyler Merritt. Merritt is a former Apache helicopter pilot turned Special Operations Air Mission Commander in the 160th SOAR. Following his graduation from the United States Military Academy at West Point, U.S. Army Captain Merritt was deployed multiple times to Iraq, Afghanistan, the Arabian Peninsula, and South America. Captain Merritt most recently served as Executive Officer C Company, the, I don't even know how you say it, 3rd 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment, SOAR. He previously served as a West Point faculty member, so that's pretty interesting. Tyler Merritt, thanks for taking time to be on the show tonight.
Hey, thank you very much for having me.
great having you on. I'm a huge supporter of the military, and the publicist that helped get you on the show, he kind of knows that. I do Veterans Day specials, Memorial Day specials, you name it. I'm all over it. I never served, but a lot of people in my family did. Great uncles in World War II, my mom's cousins in Vietnam, and a number of other cousins more recently. So I'm all over this. You and your brother Daniel both served in the Army. Is Daniel your older brother?
He is. Yes, ma'am.
He's three years
my older.
3 years older. Okay. So now what prompted you both to serve? Did you have a dad or others in the military? What persuaded you to do that?
Actually, my parents were more towards the hippie side of the cultural spectrum. But my grandparents, both of them were Marines. One of them was, they're both very stubborn and strong-headed. One of them joined at the rifle at age of 17 and stormed the beaches of Iwo Jima, got shot in the leg, and spent, I think, his birthday on the beaches waiting to be evacuated. And the other one had a hard time not punching his lieutenant in the face, so he spent a lot of time on the brig. So both interesting career paths, and ultimately it was September 11th. You know, that was the big driving force for me. I was a senior in high school and coming from Connecticut, not that far outside New York City. It really hit hard home for me, and the choice was clear.
Wow. Wow. Now, I want to ask you something. We're going to get around to your business and some other things that we're going to talk about. But I just had a couple of questions I was curious about. Knowing that you've been affiliated with West Point, that you attended there, that you've been on faculty there, I wrote an article a few years ago, and it was about one of the experts at the Combating Terrorism Center at West Point. His name was Dr. Ari Perlinger. And he published a study which really kind of set me back. And I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but I found it and I read it, the whole thing. It was about 90 or so pages, and it was kind of crazy. It was called Challengers from the Sidelines, Understanding America's Violent Far Right. And the whole published study that he did was pointing a finger at so-called right-wingers, that they were the danger in America rather than Islamic terrorism. And I was like, oh my gosh, what's going on? West Point, that's a venerable organization, you know, institution in America. And then just this fall, I had some friends that wrote articles about that second lieutenant, Spencer Rapone, or Rapone, however you say his last name. He was the guy he's the guy that called Mattis evil and said he was a supporter of communism. So I thought, are these anomalies? Can you tell me, Tyler Merritt, what is going on at West Point?
No, those are absolute anomalies. I left less than 6 months ago. I was openly medically retired out of West Point, and I was working with the Modern War Institute, but specifically with virtual reality. And I'll tell you that school is still filled with the best and brightest. It's still, you know, staffed by some of the most seasoned combat veterans and some of the most intellectually, challenging environments. And I think that there are a few bad apples everywhere. And I think you have a few idiots, for lack of better words, that somehow slip through the cracks. And it's unfortunate because they don't represent us at large. And I think most of the West Pointers that people have come to know in society, they reflect pretty well.
Yeah. Well, okay, that makes me feel better. I was getting worried. I mean, that's such a great institution to hear stuff like that. I thought, oh my gosh, I expect stuff like that out of places like Harvard, but not so much out of West Point. So,
I'm not going to lie. So I ended up had an amazing opportunity to go to Columbia University before I went back to West Point to become a faculty member. And it was incredible to go to these institutions of higher learning and have an instructor, and maybe we're supposed to be speaking of statistics, and somehow we're talking about Black Lives Matter. And I was a big proponent of No, I like to encourage debate. I grew up with Bill Buckley Jr. William F. Buckley Jr. is his son's my godfather, and you know, founder of National Review. So, and I love just sitting down with the man and being challenged with differences of opinion. But I'll tell you, in Colombia, I didn't have the ability to speak my mind without the backlash that usually followed it with the entirety of the room. I don't see that at West Point. I see, by and large, you know, the university faculty members really pushing to have that open engagement and debate and wanted to hear both sides. It's not the same. It's very different.
Good. I'm so happy to hear that. I just wanted to ask you a little bit about flying. As I told you before we came on air, I have some neighbors that are fantastic, and they're both Army vets. They're just a wonderful couple, and their kids, and he still flies. I think he does some contractual flying. He's out of here for a few months at a time and then back home. But he's listening, so I wanted to talk about what you flew. You flew Apache helicopters. Did you fly any other helicopters?
Yes, ma'am. I flew Apaches, and within the 150th, I transitioned over to Blackhawk. So from attack to assault is kind of a very big change in mission depths. But I, honestly, ever since I was a small child, I always wanted to fly. You know, I was just fascinated with any type of aircraft, fixed wing, rotary craft, and I still am. You know, it's one of those passions that you have the fortunate opportunity to turn into profession, and I loved every second of it. If I continue to fly, I definitely would be in the air, probably right now. Night flying is by far my favorite.
Wow. I've been really fortunate in the last year to be able to fly a whole lot with my friend who has a Piper Cherokee 160 building an RV-6A. And so we're going to be able to do some aerobatic flying sometime in the future. And I love it. I love to fly. I've only had the yoke in my hands a couple few times, but just being up there is fun. And I also like speed. So I say before I die, somehow I want to get in a fast craft. We'll see what happens. I think
well,
I would.
Head on down to Savannah, Georgia. I'll take you for something, a nice flight you won't forget.
Oh, I would love it. I would love it. I'd do that in a heartbeat. Now, I know that you've probably seen a lot on deployments. I've seen a little bit of your bio here and there, and you've had friends that have died. I had two wonderful Gold Star parents on a few years ago, and they've become friends, Dr. Lloyd and Mary Byers, and their boy died over there in the sandbox, I call it. They wrote a book called Keep Moving Forward, My Son's Last Words. They sent me the book. I read it. I had them on. It was so inspirational that I actually taught a citizenship class to some homeschooled teenagers, and I got copies of the book for them because I said the idea of being goal-oriented and service-oriented is something that's so fantastic that you find in a lot of military people, and this is something that I wanted them to emulate, and they were really moved by the book itself. So, I know the kind of things you've seen, and I know that inspired you and your brother and your wife to come up with this idea for Nine Line Apparel. So would you talk a little bit about what Nine Line means and how you came up with the idea?
Yes, ma'am. In the military, the Nine Line is iconic. It's a distress call. If someone's injured on the battlefield, they'll call in nine separate radio transmissions. And it's my job, you know, as the glorified bus driver, as we like to joke, you know, is to come onto the battlefield, regardless of the conditions, regardless of the fact that we will likely take fire, and to try to pull our brothers and sisters in arms off the battlefield. And the whole idea that, you know, once they return home and the wounds subside, that the bleeding stops, there's still that continued care. There's still that need to create a community of practice where individuals feel the support and are able to have a conversations with civilians such as yourself and that there's not this huge disconnect. You know, I grew up in Greenwich, Connecticut. I don't really know many other people in the military. there's a very, very big divide with those who serve and those who don't. And there really shouldn't be. And there shouldn't be the misconceptions that are very prevalent throughout society, notions of PTSD. The D aspect of it is, you know, somewhat, in my opinion, disrespectful. You know, it is not a disorder. Anyone who goes through those extremely traumatic events is going to be plagued one way or another going forward. You know, it happened with my grandparents in World War II. It'll occur with, you know, myself. I'm not excluded to think that the person that I, you know, was prior to going overseas is not the same as when I return, but it doesn't necessarily mean I'm damaged or I have this disorder. It just means that, you know, maybe loud noises or other triggers might cause a physical reaction or might cause an emotional reaction, but they're things that we learn to deal with. And that's kind of that awareness within society that, you know, our veterans are an incredible asset, an incredible resource.
Yes.
You know, the things that they've done, the sacrifice they understand, the fact that they were, and most likely still are, willing to lay down their lives for, you know, people they barely know, because it's the right thing to do to protect and serve our country. That's incredible. You know, as an employer right now, I gobble up veterans, and it's for two reasons. One, you know, it's part of our mission statement, you know, trying to get veterans hired and back into kind of a new sense of normalcy and readjusted. And two, they're just incredible employees, and they don't know how to stop. Some of my employees logged in to work last week on Wednesday, and they still haven't left. They've been sleeping there just because we have so many orders to get out the door. They just don't know how to fail.
And, wow.
And that's really what 9-Line is. It's trying to bridge the gap between those who served and those who have not, and to encourage patriotism.
Yes, I love that. And I love what you're talking about, because I'm always encouraging people. I think, oh my goodness, you take these people, you look at any of the basic training for any of the services. Now, I hear all the jokes about the Air Force and how they're looking for more comfortable seats or something. There's a lot of joking that goes on.
It's the Chair Force, but yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We got to have great comfortable seats. But, you know, it's a whole lot in fun and games. You know, the Army-Navy game was a couple weekends ago. We hate each other, vehemently hate each other for one day. But you know what? It's the only game where we might hate each other today and then be willing to die for each other tomorrow.
Yes.
And it's unique. So
yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. Oh, it's awesome. But I think about any of the basic training and then not even the advanced training, but even the basic training. If you had an employee that had gone through that and understood the chain of command and discipline and everything that goes into that, that would be fantastic for any employee, let alone the tours that they do, how hard they have to work. Because I know that my friends that are SEALs, they say that what makes a SEAL different is not necessarily the skill as much as the ability to never quit. And I think I see that. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I see that in so many military members, the ability to not quit. And who wouldn't want those sort of attributes in an employee?
Yeah. And it goes back to, obviously, the grit, the mental toughness is one thing. And I know my wife would probably tell you that it's stubbornness to some degree, but, you know, I'll have very engaging arguments with other employees, other veteran employees, and they might adamantly disagree with the policy or procedure or something to do with work. And they'll get sometimes very, not agitated, but emotional. And that they're so concerned with making the mission happen, making the business successful, even if they disagree with, say, the CEO. And I'll take that all day long over apathy or over right. an individual who's just does not really care. And that's really what you get with a lot of the veterans, especially veteran entrepreneurs, is, you know, they're usually less tactful maybe I'm just speaking for myself. it's always something that I've seemed to lack. But, you know, we take a lot of the lessons learned from our communities. I came from special operations, and we were very unique in that, you know, a lot of times rank came aside. You know, it didn't matter what your rank was. It mattered what your position was, and that position was attained based on your performance and your potential, not necessarily how long you've been there. And taking a lot of those aspects and applying it more to the civilian side, I've had individuals that, you know, rise through the ranks so quickly because of their performance and because of their potential, and it does nothing to do with their degree. And it goes everything back to their military training and their ability to just make things happen.
Right, right. Something else that I read on your website, and for everybody listening, I've got this all linked on the website. I've got a picture of some of the T-shirts that are cooler than cool, and with links from the T-shirts to the page where you can buy it, all this stuff. So there's no excuse for anybody not to be all over this nine-line website. But I read this on the website. Nine Line is committed to continuing to create jobs here in America. We have made a conscious decision to move away from foreign-made materials whenever possible and are committed to sewing and creating a cut-and-sew factory here in Savannah, Georgia in the next 3 years. Although remaining profitable is the tenet of any successful business, we have innovative ways to ensure this occurs while returning manufacturing to the U.S. We will continue to hone our skills in the apparel industry while expanding markets out outside of apparel. Man, that's excellent. Made in America. I also noticed that it seemed like the bulwark of your staff were Army vets, but you let a couple leathernecks in.
We have quite a few Army, Navy, Marine, Coast Guard. I mean, we'll take them all. I've got no discrimination against race, color, creed, or what choice of service you decided to join, even though, you know, I feel like the Army guys just seem to get it. No, and everyone is really understanding of, yeah, you know, obviously more profit is better for everyone, every business. But there are some decisions that we've made. There are social decisions, and there's some things that we stand behind that, you know, maybe exclude us from being able to do business at UC Berkeley. However, yeah, I seem to be doing pretty well everywhere else. And, you know, there are some individuals who jump up and down and say, I really want American made, but I only want it for a dollar. And it's just not possible.
Right.
So we have a niche. You know, our products are not going to be the least expensive, but they're high quality. And they are, you know, by and large, made in America. And the hats, for example, that we have, our American-made hats, you know, probably a 300% increase in our cost of goods. But the velocity of sales, the number of sales that are occurring, has increased exponentially because people really do get behind the idea that it's important to bring textile manufacturing back to those areas that were just devastated with the trade agreements that were put in place. You know, when you go through North Carolina and you see the old textile mills and factories that are all just gone, it's an abandoned ghost town. It's depressing. It's sad. And the idea that, you know, we can overcome you know, the labor disparities, it's kind of hard for me to compete with someone in China who's being paid 25 cents a week.
Right.
However, there's transportation costs. There's, you know, the idea of having too much bolts supply and too much inventory. So we try to leverage technology and innovation and planning to reduce the amount of inventory to ensure that we're as efficient as possible. And you know, we're really competitive right now, and we're going to continue to become more competitive.
That's so fantastic. And we've got a commander in chief right now that actually knows business. So hopefully that will help some. And one of the things I want to get into is talking just briefly. We've just got a few minutes left here. It's gone by too fast. The way that you feel, which I'm sure is how I feel, is really dismayed at those NFL football players who are making millions of dollars, by the way, to play a game that won't even stand for the national anthem. And in fact, they kneel. It's made me mad enough. I don't watch the NFL anymore. A lot of my friends don't watch it or attend the games anymore. And Nine Line created an I Stand line of shirts. I thought, man, that'd be great for a Christmas present. Now, it's pretty late right now to get one, but who knows? Maybe folks could pay for expedited shipping, or I had the idea that they could print a picture of those shirts, give it to somebody, and tell the recipient that the shirt is on its way. But how do you guys feel when you see those guys kneeling when the national anthem is played, Tyler?
I can only speak for myself, and I know that I do represent a large number of the military population when I say, you know, one, my friends fought and died for your right to be a jerk. It's 100% your right.
Oh, yeah.
It's also my right to go ahead and explain to you why you're a jerk, and in probably less kind words if we're in person. But it's something that I teach my children, certain values. You stand for the national anthem. You stand, you put your hand on your heart, you take your hat off your head. And it's
yes.
a sign of respect for those who have paid the ultimate sacrifice. And that's what's taught to them. Anything less is a sign of disrespect. And we can argue the merits of, you know, what they're trying to prove and trying to overcome the social injustices of the world. But the ends do not justify the means. And the venue that was chosen is about as disrespectful as me going and saying, you know what, I want to go and have a pro-choice rally at the Holocaust Museum. You know, my stepfather's a Jewish man, and I'd probably say he'd find it offensive.
Yes.
It's just not the right place, and it was chosen by an individual that, you know, Time Magazine did an article about Kaepernick, and they actually reached out to me, and I gave my opinion in the most recent magazine. It's kind of the counterpiece, as you can imagine. They use me as the opposite opinion.
Yeah.
They promoted why he should be Time, you know, Man of the Year, and I really disagree. But you know, and I can explain why. And I have the opportunity to give voice. And I think that's what I'm trying to use my platform right now. You know, we reach 4 or 5 million people a week with our different social media platforms. We've been blessed with the ability to grow from my garage to, you know, 150-man operation in less than 5 years. And we're just continuing to grow. But I feel I have an obligation to those, you know, my friends who didn't come home, to continue to promote and honor what they sacrificed. And I really hope that NFL fans and my friends continue to show our form of protest, which will affect their bottom line. And eventually, maybe they'll make the conscious decision as business owners and say, you know what, if you want to be disrespectful and you feel that strong, why don't you just stay in the locker room?
Yeah.
As opposed to drawing attention to yourself. And that's what they want. They just want attention. They're not actually trying to change anything. And I'm more than happy, and I've called out a few of the individuals, because I have friends who are in the NFL, active players and retired. And this is 99% of the players are extremely patriotic. They're extremely supportive of veteran initiatives. You know, you're talking about a handful, about a dozen people who are looking for attention, and they got it. And unfortunately, we continue to, you know, buy into it.
Yep. Oh, my goodness. Tyler Merritt, it's been just great meeting your acquaintance, getting to know you a little bit. And I just hope that Nine Line continues to prosper. I'm thankful that you're doing something for your brothers and sisters in arms that can work there. And I want everybody to be sure and click on the site. Look at the t-shirts. They are fun. They are for patriots. They support our vets. They support all the patriotic stuff you can think of. And they've got a little bit of humor with them too. I absolutely love it. So, Tyler, thanks for taking the time to be on.
Hey, thank you so much, ma'am. It was an absolute pleasure and an honor, and I appreciate the support.
Oh, you bet. Thanks for listening, everybody. The Tammy Jackson Show on the 405 will be back next week with more great guests. But until then, this is Tammy Jackson reminding you to wake up and not be silent. Let your voice be heard, because we have a country to save.
grinding my teeth on the back of an old church pew. I learned to walk in the ways of light and truth, and I was told not to speak till I was spoken to. I heard it preached what I should and I should not do, and the choir sang. A good boy, but I ain't a boy no more. I've seen some things that a man just can't ignore, and this world's gonna see what I'm standing for. I've kept my peace, but I can't hold my tongue anymore. You can't survive.